What a wonderful weekend it has been and continues to be. I remember a year ago at Pleasant Hill when Steve came up to me and said, "What do you think about Martinsville hosting this meeting?" I said, "It sounds good to me. Have you run it by anybody?" "No." I said, "You might make a phone call or two first." He did, and they announced it. And a little bit of setting goals high, but the congregation here has responded very, very well. And thanks to the ladies for all of your work. Somewhat behind the scenes, but we enjoyed it last night, and we're going to enjoy it in a couple hours. As I said last night, this is somewhat of a continuation, but what I'm going to focus on from my lesson last night, what I will focus on more this morning is the area of children and parenting. And please do not tune out simply because you may not have children still in your home, because part of the Lord's family, we are all parents, and we are all somewhat children. When my two boys were growing up, they got a lot of good parenting advice and examples from people who were not at any way biologically related to them. When I was growing up, I got a lot of the same. I was closer to some of the brothers and sisters here than I was my physical grandparents. And some of you will smile when I utter names like Uncle Harry and Aunt Gainel, Earl Powell, Woody Estes, and I could keep going on, Richard Hanover, a little closer to my age, but still old enough that he was an older brother, if not a father. So as part of the Lord's family, we all have responsibility in this area. That is my point. A wrinkled face, teeny hands, silky skin, miniature eyes, a nose and a mouth, a newborn. After months of formation, years of discussing, they burst upon the scene, upon the world, upon their family. Helpless but demanding, her mother's eyes, her father's chin, looking like both sides of the family as relatives and friends gaze in. Mother and father rejoice as a miracle is now, as a new family is formed. As loving parents, it is their desire to protect, to nurture, to feed, to guide, and to discipline. It is their duty. It is their joy. For most of us, it may well be our single greatest responsibility and impact on our lives. And while the roles may change and our bodies may slow, we never quit being parents. You never quit being mom or dad. But now, what do we do? What do we do? How do we take them from this to what we dream of them becoming someday? Always liked what Charles Shedd wrote about himself when he's written several things on family and children. He said when he was in his mid-20s, he was married, didn't have any children yet, but thought it would be a good idea to write a book on parenting. So he sat down and wrote down the title of the book before he started writing it, and he entitled it How to Raise Children. Before he got very far, they had their first child. He said, "I went back and changed the title. Now it was Suggestions on How to Raise Children." He said, "We had another child. The title changed again. Humble Hints for Parenting." By the time they had their third child, he settled on his final title. Anybody got any ideas? Well, only a fool would think he's an expert in this area. And I, at least in this area, try not to be a fool. I remember a Christian brother once sharing with me that he and his wife went to an open house for their child, and their child was particularly, I guess, well-behaved, at least in relative to the other students. And the teacher of this child looked at them and said, "You two ought to write a book on how to raise kids." And I thought, with very wise, sage insight, the brother looked at the teacher and said, "The book's already been written." Only relationships will last. Our relationship with God, our relationship with our fellow men, and our relationship with our families. And the Bible, therefore, is a book on relationships. And that's what parenting is. A book on relationships. Developing them. The Bible describes children as they are to be a joy to their parents. Well, that's the ideal. But they have brought a lot of heartache to a lot of parents. They have broken a lot of hearts in our assembly this morning. I have two wishes, at least as it relates to this topic. I wish that being a Christian guaranteed that you would have a godly family. It doesn't. And I wish, although God's much wiser than me, that people couldn't have children until they were emotionally and spiritually prepared to lead them. But God, in His infinite wisdom, allows people to have children who are in no way, shape, or form emotionally or spiritually prepared or willing to lead their children. And the toll is excruciating. On the family, on the children. There's an old Chinese proverb that says, one generation plants the tree, and another one gets the shade. That struck me because I grew up not in this building, but in this area, in this congregation, and a lot of trees were there to shade and protect me in my childhood. And I am quite eternally thankful for them. You are probably also living under the shade and protection of predecessors, people that meant a lot to you as you were growing up. They developed and shared by example with you moral and religious standards that you enjoy and are benefiting from to this day. We were shaded by them. We were taught by them. They were our examples. But today the question for you and I is simply, what kind of trees are we planting today to shade the future generation and the future of the church? Are we planting shade trees to protect our children and our young people? Or are we leaving them exposed? We discussed a little bit last night that our culture has, to say the least, slipping morals. And in our nation, I believe religion is largely disintegrating. But that doesn't mean it has to be that way for you and I. That's why we're here this morning. God has set the standard. And children are to be a joy. And yet they often break our hearts after heart after heart, left unprotected and unshaded from Satan's world and the heat of the immorality that it has. Unprotected, unshaded children will be tragic disasters. That's simply a fact. In Luke chapter 1, verse 52, it says, Jesus grew in wisdom, in stature, in favor with God and man. Four areas where Jesus grew, and I think they're the same areas that we all need to grow and our children need to grow. To grow in wisdom means he grew mentally. To grow in stature, he grew physically. To grow in favor with God, he grew spiritually. To grow in favor with man, he grew socially. There's our model. To teach our children to mentally, physically, spiritually, and socially grow. That's our goal. There is not a person here this morning who is not in or near a family that Satan has a hold on. Your family, my family. We don't have to go very far in our tree to find satanic holds. Satan has grabbed hold of the family as early as the Garden of Eden, and he is yet to let go. And I don't think he will let go until the end of time. He has vice grips on many relationships that keep them from being what God wants and intends and knows they can be. So we head for the divorce courts. We head for delinquency. Because the family is not what the Lord has instructed it to be. But the principle remains the same. Only spiritual solutions can solve spiritual problems. And our nation, our congregation, yours or my, wherever, our family problems are spiritual issues. They're not civil issues. They're not physical issues. Therefore, they demand physical solutions. What is the cause of these problems? Well, Satan disrupted the first family, and he's still at it. He caused spiritual deterioration, which led to relational deterioration. Broken relationships with God mean broken relationships in the family. And Satan's priority is to destroy the family, as we talked last night. Once he does that, he will be on his way to drastically destroying the nation and seriously harming the church. Parenting is one of those issues that I find to be a mixture of joy and heartbreak, laughter and tears. I think it must have been with tongue-in-cheek, but I'll just share a few of the thoughts that David Clark wrote about parenting. He said, and I quote, "When you make the choice to have children, you give up many things. You give up money, because children are incredibly expensive. You get to feed them, clothe them, transport them, take them to the doctor, educate them, entertain them. Your whole home is filled right now with expensive toys, clothes, shoes that your kids don't even use. Am I right? Of course. When you make the choice to have kids, you also give up your food. As they grow, children eat more and more, which of course leaves you with less and less. You see, until a child reaches 21, the part of their brain that tells them that they're full is not fully developed. And so they simply eat until there's no food left. Like cattle grazing in a pasture, kids will strip your home of food. And why does it always have to be the food that tastes the best? They'll leave behind vegetables, prunes, and whole wheat bread. But the part of their brain that tells them to avoid snack foods, candy, ice cream, and cake, is also not fully developed. No one warns us we're giving all this up when we have children. Our parents whine for grandchildren as if it's their right. They may say nothing because they know if we knew the truth, we might never have kids. And after we have kids, they smirk with a look that says, now you know what it's like. They don't want grandkids simply for pleasure, they want it for revenge." End quote. Now, even if that were true, which I don't believe it is, but even if that were true, you and I would not trade our kids for anything. We wouldn't. You grandparents wouldn't trade your grandkids for anything. Because godly children give back far, far more than they take. They are a blessing from God. They're fun. They enrich us. They give us one of the most important aspects of life's meaning. And because they are so precious to us, we want them to grow up happy, healthy, and holy. And I have those in the wrong order. We should want them to grow up holy, happy, and healthy. I only had two dreams for my two boys. One, that they were Christians, and two, that they were happy. Everything else was just icing on the cake. I won't call it unnecessary, but it was icing on the cake. And Donna and I have been blessed, I believe, in both of those areas. But under the severe onslaught of this corrupt world, with its onslaught of its wrong ideas, wrong desires, wrong words, wrong attitudes, the family is under stress and parenting is quite a work. I don't know if being a parent is harder today than ever before, because my children are out of the nest, so I don't interface with them like some of you still are. I wasn't alive 100 years ago to know how parenting was then. I do believe it's plenty hard. And godly parents welcome all the help that those the rest of us can give them. Even the world recognizes what a stress there is on parenting. But I believe the world comes up with a wrong conclusion. One of the great conclusions the world has is that the problem is our children lack self-esteem. And so we spend time building up their self-esteem, which many times is simply like pouring gas on a fire. Because children, you and I when we were young people, and even as we're older, have a will in ourselves that is self-directed. Telling them when we build them excessively simply sometimes instills in them they are justified in wanting their own will and their own way. And Christianity is not about having our own will and our own way. Neither is marriage. When I do marriage counseling, one of the things you always listen for is how often they use the word I rather than we or them. So what is the answer? Well, Rick read for us this morning Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Last night I made the comment that I think we all need to be evangelists in our homes. And what I meant by that is the primary job of a parent, a godly parent, in my opinion, is to bring their children to the saving knowledge of the Lord. Your children need to be saved just like all of the other people in the community that don't yet know the Lord. And if we can't save our children, then we're probably not going to do very well saving others. It is often not what we do to our children that's a problem. It's often what we don't do to them that is the problem. They need to understand the concept of consequences for their actions. They need to understand there is a judgment day, there is a heaven and a hell, and the stark difference couldn't be greater. Without understanding of law and judgment, there can be no appreciation for grace and mercy. Grace and mercy only have appreciation in the hearts of people that understand law and judgment. It is good for our children to hear adult sermons because they absorb a lot more than we think they do. Our first primary task as godly parents is to lead our children to the Lord. It is a formidable task and it is a thrilling task to teach them of God's holiness. To teach them that God hates sin. Our children need that same salvation as anybody else. What a joy it is when you can lead them or participate in leading them to the Lord. A national police agency made a list. I thought at first it was a little tongue-in-cheek, but I think they were deadly serious. And they entitled this list, How to Ruin Your Children. I just want to share a few of their points. Number one, begin with infancy to give your child everything he wants. Number two, when he picks up bad words or conduct, laugh at it and call it cute. Number three, withhold spiritual training so that when he becomes an adult, he can decide for him or herself. Number four, avoid using the word wrong. It may develop guilt feelings in them. Number five, always pick up everything they leave lying around so they'll learn to place all responsibility on others when they become adults. See, even our culture sees that children without discipline and instruction are potential disasters. They went on, spoil them. Never spank them because spanking is immoral. Well, we need to read Proverbs chapter 10, verse 13. The rod brings wisdom. I know there is a large segment of our society that no longer spanks their kids. I'm not going to tell you how to raise your kids, but I can tell you how God says. We're not talking about beating them, but we are talking about correcting them. One of the highlights of my young years at Walnut and Grant, I was sitting behind my mom and my sister was acting up, so mom took her out. Well, when we got took out, we knew what that meant. So Karen yelled, that was my sister, "Mom, don't spank me," as loud as she could. And everyone laughed. I went, "Yes." Number whatever, always bail them out of trouble so they will like you. Never let them suffer the consequences of their behavior. I think that's one of the most important things, errors that sometimes parents make. We love them, but how are they going to learn if they don't sometimes, or maybe each time, have to bear the consequences? The thought of having a child spend a night in jail sends chills up most loving parents, but it may be the absolute most loving thing you can do. Don't bother them with chores so they can be irresponsible when they go older. Give them a big allowance, but don't make them work for it. They might get the idea that they'll have to work for a living later on. See, the point of this, even our culture understands this. God has given us children, and unless we follow godly instructions on parenting, we will produce disasters. One in every three American children is living in a family without a father. Only 20% of American households have married couples with children under 18. There are more households in America where one person lives than married couples with children now. The percent of mother-only and father-only families is increasing. Not only are we seeing same-sex households, we're seeing same-sex households who are trying to raise children. But even for families with married couples, the question remains, what are we teaching our kids? Are we just living with our children, or are we leading them and shaping their lives? I picked out 10 things from the first few chapters of Proverbs. I'm not going to turn to the verses for the sake of time, but I will give them to you that I believe the Lord is teaching us through the pen of Solomon that we as godly parents had better teach our children. Number one, teach them to fear the Lord. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7. Teach them to guard their minds. So much is being thrown at them. Chapter 1, verse 8 following, teach them to obey their parents. The whole book of Proverbs is largely, my son, listen. It's a parental manual. Chapter 1, verse 10, select your companions carefully. Parents, you need to know who your children's friends are. We need to teach them to control their bodies. Chapter 2, verse 16. We need to teach them to enjoy their mates and not go looking for marital blessings outside of the marital union. Chapter 5, verse 15. We need to teach them to watch their words. Chapter 4, verse 24, that is the key to wisdom. We're to teach them to pursue work. Chapter 6 and chapter 10. We're to teach them how to manage their money. It amazes me how many Christian families are such poor money managers. It's just amazing to me. We honor God with it. We honor our children with it. We're to teach them to love our neighbors. And if we don't teach them those and other things we find in scriptures, Satan will teach them his ways. We have these teachings and duties as parents because we live in a society that has a postmodern, post-Christian worldview. In Ephesians chapter 6, it tells the children to honor and obey. Honor is the attitude, obey is the action. It tells us not to frustrate our children. There are many ways we can frustrate our children. We can overprotect them. We can fence them in, don't trust them, without letting out the rope at an appropriate speed. We can show favoritism. Isaac's family was a great disaster in favoritism of parenting. We can set unrealistic goals. You got C's, get B's. You got B's, get A's. You got A's, get all A's. We can be overindulgent, giving them everything, picking up after them, bailing them out, enabling them, blaming others, let them sin with no consequences. Well, you can do that, but God won't. We can do it by discouraging them. We can do it by not sacrificing for them. We can do it by neglect. But at the heart of parenting, and I want to spend a moment on this, is not the conduct of our children. I do not believe it is the conduct of our children that is the most important thing for us to consider. I want to explain that very carefully because I think their conduct is important. But Paul tells us in Ephesians to bring them up in the nurture and admonition. In Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23, it says, that flows from the heart. If we simply raise our children to a certain set of behavior, we've not necessarily changed their heart. If we change their heart to be godly, then the behavior will follow. Ask yourself, have you seen children raised who were obedient, were always at church, and as soon as they got out from under their parents' umbrella, they were gone? Now, what was that? It was behavior modification without heart modification. It's when our children leave our roofs that we find out really where their heart is. They go to college. They go to the military. They get married. Whatever. Our job as parents is to modify and teach their hearts. And out of that comes behavior. If we are simply behavior-oriented, we will correct them when they embarrass us, rather than correcting them when their heart needs to be molded. Raising a child, I believe, is a heart issue. Not behavioral, but heart. Behavior is at its very core. I know a lot of growing up, a lot of my peers who behaved better than I did. Maybe most of them. I didn't set the bar terribly high. But I look back and I wonder if their heart was modified. The problem with rebellious children is a heart problem. Our goal is to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4, four things that the children of Israel were to teach their children. Teach them that there is one true God and He is sovereign, verse 4. Teach them to love God, verse 5. Teach them to obey God, verse 6. And teach them to follow your example if it's a godly example, or show them. Always pointing them toward God. We live in a society that does not do that. We live in a society where corporal correction of our children is frowned upon. Those of you involved in the public school systems know that it is almost impossible to correct children, at least the way that was most effective for me. When I was growing up, I went to Central Elementary. I don't know if it's up there now, the building's different. our principal had a paddle with holes in it. And it got used. Not as often as it needed to be, but it left a lasting impression on us. Our job as Christian parents is to prepare our children for the Lord. We're told in Proverbs 22:6 to train up a child in the way that he would go, and when he is old, he will not depart from that. I do not take that as a guarantee that if we teach them all there is about the Lord, they will automatically be Christians, because God does give us free will. But it is teaching us to be sensitive to our children's ways, their bents, their behaviors. You ever hear a parent say they have more than one child? I don't know what happened. We raised them all the same. That's probably what happened. They were not all the same. Now, consistency is a wonderful thing, but each child is different. And if you have more than one child, you know what I'm talking about. It takes them to develop a godly manner. Unrestrained children are a tragedy, and they're unbiblical. That's what happened in Eli's household in 1 Samuel chapter 2. It's what appears to have also happened in Samuel's household a little bit later on. There were really two reasons why the children of Israel wanted a king. One, we often quote, is they wanted to be like other nations. Two, they were afraid Samuel's kids would take over, and they weren't at all righteous. Being a godly person does not guarantee it, but being a godly parent causes us to strive very hard for it. We can take them to church, and we can teach them the stories. But while we're doing that, let's teach them more than just the stories. Let's teach them the themes. Let's teach them the reason. Let's teach them the whys. I believe we often underteach our children because we are undertaught ourselves. Because teaching them about themes of theology, of the whys, takes much more work than teaching them to memorize the 10 plagues or the 10 commandments. That's a good thing to do, to memorize those things, the books of the Bible. But they reach ages where they need answers and deserve answers far, far more than that. Lest it be an opportunity for Satan. I want to end with a verse in Nehemiah chapter 4. And we could go on and on. But there's an interesting phrase in Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 14. He says, I looked, and I rose up, and I said unto the nobles, and to the rulers, and to the rest of the people, be not afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. Fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. What he was saying is fight for your families. Your family is worth fighting for. It's a blessing from God. But godly children don't just happen. Oh, occasionally a child will be godly in spite of us. But somewhere along the line, godly teaching and godly example is crucial. How can a family with multiple children sit quietly in the pew, attentive, or at least non-disruptive? And a couple with only one child seems to be a holy terror. Well, we all have our bad days. I understand that. But there's a reason for it. And we as parents, we as adults in God's family, will be held accountable for how we do or do not discharge this duty.